I'm struggling to breathe. Martin, do you have an inhaler? Do you know? Anybody have an inhaler? Inhaler. Yeah, yeah, got one there. Oh, thank you. That worked really well. I'm also feeling a bit down. Has anybody got any ecstasy? Oh, I'm really nervous, man, and I'm really sweaty. Has anybody ever seen that Stephen King film, Carrie? Remember the fucking, the book? Fucking terrified to stand under there. So I've got a couple of apologies to make beforehand. Sandra, thanks so much for your share. Mariano, thanks for chairing, meeting two people that I really love that I met in the lockdown. Do you know what I mean? And like a lot of other people in here, I know there's people really close to my heart here. And I have some friends that travelled with me as well, know who have kept me going. Oh, get really emotional these days, man. So one of the apologies that I've got to make is I come from Glasgow, right? I'm not apologising for that, fuck's sake. Fucking proud of that. I'm going to apologise because although I live about 1 hour's drive from the English border, right, it's about 90 miles away. Yet, we are the worst English speakers on the fucking planet. There was a guy here a minute ago from a fucking different hemisphere. From fucking Australia, and he speaks better English than me. So, fucking Tigers from Switzerland, she speaks better English. So for any Americans and other nationalities, I'm sorry, I'm apologising for my language. And I also swear quite a fucking lot because I'm from Glasgow, you know, and it's really common parlance in Glasgow. In fact, I've got friends in here that tell me that the shares that I've done don't make the cut on the UKNA website because of vulgarity and profanity. And I was a little bit hurt by that. And I thought, though, the next share that I done, you know, I said that, look, I'm going to try and share, you know, without swearing. And after about 10 seconds, I thought, fuck that. Fuck that. I honestly couldn't do it. See, if you come into a meeting in Glasgow and you never swore, you're going to stand out, believe me. People are going to say, oh, the Jehovah's Witnesses are in. Or he's a snooper for the Social Security. Or an undercover copper. And I don't mean to offend anybody. If there's any Jehovah's Witnesses, I don't mean to offend you. If there's any undercover coppers, I did mean to offend you. So I'm starting to breathe a wee bit. Thanks, Martin. Unfortunately, I have a condition called emphysema. It wasn't by accident. You know, and it cost me a lot of money. I got emphysema through smoking crack cocaine, but particularly smoking pipes that I thought had crack cocaine in it, which will almost guarantee that you burn away the tissue at the top of your lungs. and I had started smoking crack cocaine because I couldn't inject anymore. I'm from 1980s inner city Glasgow. If anybody, I'm going to just give you these wee figures here at the moment. I come from Glasgow in Scotland. Scotland in Europe has the highest drug deaths rate in the whole of Europe, and has done for the last 9 years in a row. And Glasgow's at the head of that as well. You know, we use, and we use heavily, and we die regularly. I don't know what that is about Glasgow. We're still a bit fucking nuts, man. And when we use, we go fucking hard. And I'm typical of that type of addict. I grew up in the 80s. I done an apprenticeship through drugs, no alcohol, solvents, stuff that you could buy out of pharmacy like codeine and Marzine travel sickness pills, and graduated all the way up until I found heroin. And I actually went looking for that drug when I heard that it was available. You know, I wasn't one of those kind of unlucky people that I've read about, know that that was maybe sitting at a party one night and a couple of unscrupulous guys came up to give me my first bit for free. Did that ever happen to anybody? And I remember reading in the newspaper one time that heroin was cheaper than fish and chips. And I was like, I need to fucking go there. Where the fuck, where was that? Where was that? So I used heroin, and I used it for a long time, and I used it intravenously, and I used it until I couldn't use it anymore. I don't have any veins in my body. And again, that was no accident. That was through the methodical and systematic practice of injecting myself in every part of my body. Every part, the neck, the palms of my hands, the soles of my feet, and under my tongue. If you're, next time you're in front of a mirror, you'll see two little veins under your tongue. And when I was running out of veins, I seen them one day, and I thought, I'm going to try and inject there. And I got a little tiny syringe, and I tried to put heroin under my tongue, and as soon as I touched it with a needle, my tongue blew up. I had like a pool ball in my mouth, and I couldn't talk for about 3 weeks. I couldn't talk, and I was out on the street, and I was trying to score. I was like, who's got? Is it good? Is it good for dancing? Huh? And very soon after that, you know, because I was getting desperate, these were some of the first prayers that I had ever said, the first acknowledgement I really had that anything that might have been greater and more powerful than me. When I was in baths, hot baths, full of my own blood, and desperately crying in anguish and pain, and saying, please, God, please, let me get this last hit. Please, let me get this last hit. Please, God, please. And I promise you, tomorrow I'll start smoking it. And it was during this time when I used to try and scan my body. I was naked in front of a mirror, trying to find obscure places to and I would mark it with a pen. If I seen something, I'd mark it with a pen. And I remember one day somebody seen these wee pen marks on me that had marked where the veins were. And I said, what's that on you? Is that little arrows through on you? How the fuck do you explain that? I don't know how they got there. So it was during one of these times, right? Now I need to ask, you've got to use your imagination here, right? I was a lot slimmer, right? And I happened to look down and I seen my penis. And I seen a vein. And I thought, yeehaw! And I slept soundly that night because I was a bag of nerves, do you know what I mean? I was, by the way, as I was losing the veins, I was getting abscesses in their place, do you know what I mean? And I was the walking abscess. I couldn't have laces in my shoes. I had big giant feet like a Sasquatch. Couldn't really talk like go to my tongue. And now I've seen this vein on my... So I gets up in the morning, and it was a good morning because I knew that I was getting a hit. Desperate. I knew I was getting a hit. And I prepared my stuff the way I prepare my stuff, but I was doing it with a sort of spring in my step. Oh, do da dee. And I've got the stuff ready, and I'm ready to have this hit. And I put the tourniquet on. And I've put a needle into my penis. And the needle was in the vein. Because I pulled it back and some blood went into it. And I tried to put the heroin in. And as soon as I tried to push it in, something went pop! And the needle shot across the room. And blood came gushing out. And I was like, fuck! Worst thing that an intravenous drug user has to do is swallow the fucking stuff. No, the desperation. Now, the reason that I tell that story, right? How fucking desperate, how much in the grip of a fucking phenomenon, disease, illness, do you have to be in to actually inject yourself in a fucking penis, man? See the aftermath of that. Over the next 24 hours, my penis turned black. Black. And it was fucking agony. Going to have to go to the doctors. Now see, if this happened today, I would be probably what you call an internet sensation. See, a white guy with a black penis, probably got all sorts of fucking endorsements and hits and fucking fuck knows. So I've had to go to the doctor, and the doctor was about 17 years old. And I've walked in and I've got these big jogging bottoms on, trainers with no laces in them because my fucking feet, big feet, I'm walking in like that. And the guy says, okay, how can I help you? It was a wee Malaysian guy. And he was sitting right and he says, how can I help you? And I went, and see as I pulled my penis out, he actually recoiled. He did that. Now, I came into Narcotics Anonymous with no self-esteem, right? None. After 23 years of working this program, I've built it up to low self-esteem, right? As soon as that doctor did that, I went into negative equity fucking self-esteem. And the guy just started writing, and he said, "George, take that to the hospital." And the upshot of that was I had to go to the hospital and get an operation on my penis, where I had, I don't know if you would call it a moment of clarity or whatever, but as I lay, as a young man, by the way, a young man, absolutely ravaged by drugs, I lay naked on this hospital bed, the blue gown on, and I could see my body. And I looked as if I'd been hit by a nail bomb and then ate by piranha fish. There was chunks missing off me. Do you know what I mean? I was in my 20s. Do you know what I mean? I looked down, man, and I had abscesses, needle scars. Do you know what I mean? I was an absolute mess. And you think, man, what the fuck did that? What caused that? You know, I knew that most of us were committing suicide. And that the thing that I experienced, no, this addiction, my addiction, do you know what I mean? Slowly committing suicide. Not only are you slowly committing suicide, you're actually paying for it as well. That's fucking strange, isn't it? Every fucking penny I go at, thousands and thousands of pounds to look like that. Now, I never knew, do you know what I mean? See, the word addict, I never knew about addicts, addiction, Narcotics Anonymous. I was a dirty, low-life, junkie, scumbag, dealer in death, and son of the devil. These are some of the names that attached themselves to me. And they were, no, it wasn't through bad luck, you know, I kind of earned them names. And that's how I felt, do you know what I mean? I'm a non-stop, 24 hours, I never took time off. Never had a holiday. I was never so sick or had a bit of a sore back that I thought I'd better phone some dealers and let them know that I won't be in today. I used until I got, before I got to the end of my road, I had a friend who got clean, and I grew up with this boy, and me and this boy used all these drugs, usually at the same time as well, as we kind of graduated right up to heroin and crack cocaine. And he had got clean, and my brothers had says to me, "George, your pals got clean." You know, and I used to be like, "What's clean?" And I mean, I don't know, but he's looking really well and stuff, you know, and he's doing good, and he was asking for you and stuff, and I'm like, okay. At this point, I'm getting and using and finding ways and means and selling drugs and heavily involved in drugs. And this guy, run about 18 months, and I know this happens to quite a lot of us, certainly did with me, run about 18 months clean, you get yourself a white horse, suit of armour, loads of any literature, and go looking for some of your old friends. You boy! Come here a minute. And this guy came looking for me, right? And he came looking for me one day, when me and two other guys were in this house and we were busy cutting up stuff for distribution and stuff, you know, when all of a sudden there was a knock at the door. And the two other guys have very quickly grabbed stuff together and put it somewhere. Put extra bits in your mouth ready for swallowing because we weren't expecting anybody. And I've had to... Now, I'm a big guy, but when it's called for, I can move like a fucking ninja. And I've got to the... to the door, and it's only my fucking friend. It's only my friend, and I was like, fuck, and he's shouting through, "George!" I'm like, fuck. Fuck. It would have been better if it was the coppers. And I've had to let this guy in. Now see, when I look back on that scene, when I look back, when I picture that in my mind's eye, right? The funny thing was, me and these two other guys looked the same. We looked the same, and I know it's a bit of a fashion faux pas, but the three of us were wearing double denim, right? Denim jackets, denim jeans, and caterpillar boots. Without organising that, no, without phoning round in the morning saying, what are you wearing today? Not only were we wearing the same clothes, we had long beards, long hair, no teeth, and we were yellow. With hepatitis, yellow. We looked like the Bee Gees, but in zombie form. No, if you can picture undead Bee Gees, staying alive. And I've had to bring my friend in, right, the clean guy for NA, and I've had to bring him in to the room, and the two Bee Gees are looking at him like that. Who the fuck's that? And I was like, listen, this is my friend. I was actually embarrassed for him. Being clean, new trainers, haircut, teeth brushed, fucking. And I had to say to the other two Bee Gees, listen, that's my fucking pal. Do you know what I mean? He's okay. He looks like a fucking policeman. He's not a policeman. And that was the first time he came for me. And he took me to my first NA meeting under duress, right? Because I was not seeking recovery. How are you doing for time, Mariano? All right? So, I never wanted to go to an NA meeting, but he cited the legislation under the old PALS Act, 1880 fucking something. No, I've known you all my life, George. Do you know what I mean? Come on, we used to get on that. No, just come. And I'm like, fuck's sake. Right, okay, I'll come. And I've went to this meeting like that. And walked into this church hall on a Sunday night. And I've walked into this meeting the same way I walk into anywhere, into any nightclub or into any prison. I walk in like, it's called fear, but you don't know it's fear at that time. So I walked in like that. And right away, I went, see like that predator, locked on, you think, seen an old guy with white hair and a ponytail. I went, fucking hippie. Smokes cannabis. No, it's not about the drugs you used in here, right? I wasn't very well at this time. Smokes fucking cannabis and listens to fucking Lynyrd Skynyrd and Rush or fucking something like that. Then I've seen the skinniest male human being that I've ever seen with a rainbow jumper on, red, yellow, green, red, yellow, green, and John Lennon glasses. I went, fucking student! A student! I don't know why I had a pathological hatred of students. He uses when he gets a student loan, and then his mum tops up his habit. And then I've seen the next guy. The next guy had a fucking guitar. A guitar. And I'm like, mate, who had time for guitar lessons? And they're using. Fucking, no, I mean, I'm non-stop. I don't have had guitar lessons. Plus, you should have sold the guitar, for fuck's sake. And then I started noticing things like teeth and veins, and I automatically, like a lot of us do, and I see it so often, there is something in us that wants to automatically rule you out of recovery. And mine was the arrogance of being a professional in amongst amateurs. This isn't a fucking hobby for me. This is a fucking way of life, mate. I don't play fucking guitars and fucking shit like that. So I left my girlfriend. fell in love for about 3 nights. Until my stash was getting smaller and smaller, and then I had to beat a hasty fucking retreat. So this guy, he never gave up on me. And eventually, at the end of the road, God willing, it's the end of my road, when I got to a place so dark, so painful, so fucking lonely. You know that loneliness? You know that loneliness that you feel even in your own family home? And I know some of you do. I know you do. The loneliness that you feel in your own family home. You feel it in a football stadium full of your own supporters. I felt it in a rave, that I had put on. It was my rave and I still felt fucking lonely. And I felt it in bed next to a partner. It's some sort of condition of the spirit. This is a loneliness that's not cured by proximity to other people. There's something in here, a problem in my spirit. And this fucking hole that I had in me was now getting bigger and bigger. The more I used, it was exponentially growing. The more drugs I was taking, the worse this was getting, and the less affected the drugs had stopped working. And I've devoted my whole life to the getting, using and finding ways and means to get more. And new drugs turned their back on me. And that's what we called a dilemma. I need to use drugs to function because I'm terrified of withdrawals. But the more I'm taking, the fucking worse I'm getting. And towards the end of my using, in desperation, I was taking anything. I was injecting ketamine into muscles and drinking vodka and swallowing pills, which stuff I would never do, but I was trying to get out my own head. And that guy came for me again. The guy came for me. And I'd been busted. I was looking at some more prison time. I'd been caught with a lump of drugs. And I wasn't turning up to court for it. And this guy came for me again. But this time, this guy was 8 years clean. And he was a manager of a 12-step facility outside Glasgow. And he turned up again and he said, "George, why don't you come down to this place?" And I was like, "No. No. Fuck. Withdraw." He says, "Look, we can detox you." And I was like, "I'm scared." You know what I mean? I never said I was scared. Do you know what I mean? I never tell anybody that. But I was like, "Listen, I've got business affairs to take care of in Zurich and fucking Geneva and stuff." Anyway, I've ended up, I got in the car and my journey began there. And this guy drove me to this 12-step facility. And we've walked into this room and there was 11 other guys in this room sitting in a kind of semi-circle. They were having like a just for the day meeting, which I know now. And this guy's took me in to introduce me to these guys. And I've walked into the room like, terrified. It's called terrified. And this guy in front of these 11 strangers says to me, in front of these guys, right, "George, I've known you all my life. You know, we ran about the same street gangs together, stood up in courts together. You know, you had your back, you had my back and stuff, you know," and I'm like nodding. He says, "And I've known you all my life." He says, "And you're a really intelligent guy. Is that right?" See, if somebody tells you you're intelligent in front of strangers, you're not going to deny that. Do you know what I mean? You're not going to. "Actually, I'm a bit of a donut. I'm actually a bit thick." So, nod, "Yep, I'm a bit intelligent." And then he says, "Not only you're a bit intelligent, George, no, you can wheel and deal and duck and dive and stuff, you know?" So I'm like, "Yep." In front of these guys. My curriculum vitae is getting read out in front of these idiots. And then he says to me, no, only you're intelligent, George. You can wheel and deal and duck and dive. You can handle yourself. I was like, yep. Yes, there's going to be a fight. And then the guy says to me, in front of these strangers, first time I've met them, how does it feel then, George, to know that all your intelligence, all your abilities, being able to look after yourself, has wound you up in a treatment centre in that condition? I was like, what the fuck just happened there? In front of these fucking idiots as well. You know that feeling when you realise that you've been robbed, that you've been ripped off, that it actually is brick dust or talcum powder? Or you know that feeling? Bastards. That's what that felt like then. I've just been robbed. And the guy then says to me, George, the war's over. The war's over. You lost. You lost. He says to me, all you have to do now, George, is put your hands up and surrender. Just give up. I was, fuck. Something shifted in me that day. Something shifted inside. Something moved in the spiritual kind of world. See, for that day, I've never used again. Never used again. My recovery journey began. I was introduced to the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm a loyal soldier to any. I don't need to go anywhere else. No, I'm a one solution, one disease type of guy. Do you know what I mean? This is my home and you're my family. I have people in here closer to me than my own family of origin. Do you know what I mean? Because we have relationships forged together in shame and desperation and all that stuff that we went through, fucking trauma and stuff, do you know what I mean? I can tell you, I could pick somebody out of this audience, not so much you, somebody out of this audience, and I could share my deepest, darkest secrets, feelings with, and I can't do that with members of my own family, do you know what I mean? This place has kept me alive. Now, I know some of you must have been looking at me, right, and thinking, he's quite an attractive man for nearly being 61. But he's got a bit of an odd shape. This, see this? This is a stoma. My intestine is outside my body. And it was caused by blood clots. 2 years ago, three times in a week, I was fighting for my life. I had flatlined and stuff, you know, and I was in a coma, and I had sepsis, and I was on a ventilator and stuff, and I survived that, right? Now, the surgeon says to my wife about 3 or 4 weeks ago, your husband, in over 30 years of performing this surgery, your husband is the luckiest man I've ever known. The luckiest man I've ever known. And I'll tell you right now, luck had nothing to do with that. Absolutely nothing. And I had nothing to do with it either. You did. You did. People were praying for me. People in America, people all over the world were praying for me. Me. I'm a dirty, low-life, junkie, scumbag. And I can't believe that. People care about me. and I care about you. This place saved my life. You introduced me to God. You introduced me to God. Luck had nothing to do with us. I was carried right through that process. And when I came round in that, after the coma and stuff, you know, I knew, and I don't mean this to sound arrogant or anything, you know, because I've had a sort of spiritual awakening in here. It was a sudden, profound thing, which I've never shared about because I lack the vocabulary to adequately explain what happened to me, but I never used again. And I'm somebody that never stopped choosing. You could not stop me unless you locked me up. But God did. Narcotics Anonymous did. You're my family. And I fucking love this place. And I'm a loyal soldier to the NA fucking army. And I just wish everybody well, you know. And I like to, you know, I'm a product. I'm a miracle. A miracle. A supernatural phenomena defying any logical explanation. How somebody like me can get clean. And yet here I am. I fucking love being clean. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love the people. I don't love all the people in it. I don't love a couple of people that are there and stuff, you know. But I try. I try. This is my home and you're my family. And I think we're going to be running out of time now. So I just want to finish. I was going to say, what was that song again, man? Was out of my head, don't know where I am. Now I get my drugs, hugs in Rotterdam. I'm glad to be here and clean, thanks.